folks, and welcome to yet another episode of the Leadology Podcast. And man, oh man, we got a good one for you today, that is for sure. This is Melissa Gardner Day here at the Leadology Podcast. We're going to talk about her career, what she's been doing, how she got there, and what's up next. But you know what's up next here? I was thinking, could there be but one note on a trombone that says it all? How about a D flat? Yeah, you know, D flat, the dog flat. That's such a grand note. It just sits up there loud and proud, and man, as I've mentioned before, it's like meat and potatoes. It is close to the bone. It represents the trombone, the D flat. So yeah, that comes from in the background there. That's from Front Range, which is a fusion group of mine, and that album is called The High Road. There's Art Boughton on the EWE, an acronym that is more fun to say than it is to play. Electronic wind instrument. Hey, but let's get on back to Melissa. It's Melissa Day. I've been enjoying her playing now for a while, as she is what you can call an emerging rising star, if you wanted to, but that's just because it's early in her career. Suffice to say, she is a wonderful trombonist, a band leader, recording artist, composer, and pedagogue, as we will learn about all the wonderful teaching she's doing on top of everything else. A trombonist with no less of an international standing than the great Curtis Fuller has described her as technically creative and emotionally powerful. And if you look at her website, he goes on to say her improvisation is inspiring and motivating for the listener, and she draws you in with a raw expression that directly relates to life experience. And I think he nails it. Definitely a soulful, lyrical trombonist who I describe as sounding a bit like an R&B singer, and establishing herself already with the one thing that jazz players want to do, and that is to have a recognizable persona, a sound, and a demeanor that is all their own. And she is certainly putting that together. But you know what? Wouldn't it be more fun just to talk to Melissa? So let's go do that. Let's join Melissa Gardner here at the Leadology Podcast. Hey, look, everybody. It's Melissa Gardner. She's right here. And welcome to the Leadology Podcast. How are you
Thank
doing?
You so much. Thanks for having me. It's really wonderful to meet you and to be a part of this.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you too. And I have to apologize for this raucous studio audience. They're so loud. Maybe I can get security to calm them down a little.
They're all take it easy.
I know. It's they're so excited because it's Melissa Gardner Day, and I hope they all brought gifts. Yeah.
Food in all shapes and forms.
So would I, with a specifically chocolate cake. That would be nice if they wanted to bring that. Yeah, and I have coffee, so we're ready to go. Mm-hmm. All right, so here's, as I mentioned, I've got the giant book of Melissa here, done a little research. I already knew a lot of stuff. That's why I invited you here, because I like so much what you're doing, what you've done so far, and what's happening in the world of Melissa. You spell your name very cool with the I in there. So what's the background of that? Yeah. And is it actually Gardner? I'm saying it right, aren't I?
Yeah, it's Gardner. I mean, I did that on purpose. The really? I. No, I'm just kidding. It's really annoying because people spell it wrong. They don't know what to do with the I. But yeah, my dad was super into genealogy, so I'm pretty sure it goes back to English origins. But the Gardner family has been in the United States for, he's traced it back, I think, at least 10 generations.
Whoa.
So
are you part of the original?
Like one Maybe. I think one of the first settlers was Lyon Gardner.
Wow.
So there's a lot of literature and stuff. It's quite
Was he
interesting.
like a
They
fur
fly.
trapper, part of the Revolutionary World or something, or what was
Yeah,
he?
hopefully they were, not the bad guys in our history, but who
Right.
knows?
We'll just say they were the good guys. First one,
We'll
they
hope.
were.
At least I'm here.
Right. There you go. And they must have been like jazz sack butt players or something.
Oh, I'm
Pusana.
sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
No doubt
Absolutely.
out there in the wilderness with the coonskin hat. Yeah, my people go back that far too. I got all kinds of genealogy research, so, and an I in my name that makes it unpronounceable. People say Weist instead of Weist all the time, so I feel your pain. But well, let's go to Melissa Begins. Here's Melissa beginning. Now tell me, born in Sydney Center, or that's just kind of where you started, upstate New York? What's that?
Oh, you really did some digging there.
I know, right?
So I was born in Malone, New York, which is
Malone.
pretty
Okay.
much Canada. But my
Wow.
family moved around a lot growing up. So I did spend most of my childhood in Sydney Center. And when I say most of my childhood, I mean 6 years of it, because we
Wow.
moved around that much. So 6 years was the longest time sitting anywhere. Sydney
Yeah.
Center is a minuscule town. If you blink, you'll miss it pretty
Uh-oh.
much. But it's in the Catskill region in New York.
Oh,
Upstate, I would call
beautiful.
it upstate, upstate. It's a
Nice.
notch above what New Yorkers call upstate. But yeah, it was beautiful in the middle of nowhere. So around eighth grade, I moved to Syracuse area, and established some roots here through high school, and then moved back to Syracuse after college. So
So
yeah, I've been here ever.
oh, okay, cool, in the Syracuse area, and we're going to get into that in fine detail in a minute, but keeping kind of a timeline here. So your father was a preacher, pastor? What kind of situation was that?
He was, yeah, that's kind of, well, he changed jobs while I was a kid. He was an insurance salesperson.
Wow.
And then he became a pastor, and he kind of graduated to larger churches, which is part of why we moved so much, just career changes and
Well,
all that.
pastor insurance, that's kind of the same deal, you know. I mean, you gotta.
It's your salesperson either way, so.
Right. That's true. That's true. Right. One is lifetime insurance and the other is eternity insurance, I guess, or something. But
Or I guess that's a more, positive way to look at it.
yes, absolutely. What do you mind me asking, what flavor of church, what denomination kind of thing?
I was raised in the fundamental slash independent Baptist church
Ah.
ideology. So it was actually quite strict.
Yeah.
We weren't allowed to do pretty much anything. So that did impact my musical journey.
I'll bet.
Because honestly, we couldn't even listen to music unless it was religious or classical.
Wow.
And jazz was a little bit on the edge. So me, like, being into jazz in high school, that was me living on the edge.
Whoa, that was the rebellious
Yeah,
status there.
that was the rebellious moment.
Well, a child of a preacher has to be rebellious one way or another. So you chose a great way with jazz. That's wonderful. And so the Baptist church that I know about is more in the South where my family is. So that's more of a gospel-y kind of thing. But that, I'm guessing, was not your upbringing, the gospel church.
No, we weren't allowed to clap in church. We weren't
Wow.
allowed to. Yeah, it was way different. We weren't allowed to dance. Nothing.
Amazing. Well, you know, you have really progressed. Talk about a long arc musically, because by the time you get to this little light of mine where you're singing and playing and, you know, some of my friends would describe that as going to church. It'd be like, Lord have mercy. That's soulful. That's a different kind of church there. I love that track. But we'll get into all the specifics of the music here in a minute. Okay, now you find your way to Liverpool High School. Tell us about that. And it's got nothing to do with John, George, Paul, or Ringo. It's
That's probably the worst Liverpool accent I've ever heard anybody try.
I didn't even see. I wasn't sure there was an accent there.
There wasn't. There wasn't. There wasn't. I got to get Ringo. Ringo. I can't do it. So, tell us about Liverpool High School.
So Liverpool is a suburb of Syracuse. Of course, everything is named after our settler, the original Lion Gardner. Liverpool is, it was a really great program, and it had a lot to do with my foundation as a musician. It was quite a large high school. I think I had a graduating class of 900 something. And the music program was quite influential on me. My director there, Jim Spadafore, he was much more than a band director. He was like a second dad, and he really pushed me and did everything above and beyond what he was ever asked to do. And
isn't that special? So, I mean, when you have a mentor like that to start out with, quite often it is the band director, for us in music anyway. Mm-hmm. And saw in an interview or heard in an interview that he brought in guest artists and things and had jam sessions and essentially turned you on to jazz. Is that true?
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely a big part of it. He brought in Terrence Blanchard. He brought in Diva Jazz Orchestra. He brought in John Pizzarelli. I was getting exposed to some incredible artists from an early age.
Huge advantage.
There was a conglomerate. Yeah, for sure. He would write grants and get the funding and do all the work and just make it happen for us.
Wow.
Mr. Spadafore. So in high school, there was a conglomerate jazz band of multiple high schools. Because there was a private school that was really small and they weren't big enough to have a full band. So somehow I got the call for a third trombone because, that's just, they needed someone to fill the chair. And I wasn't super experienced with jazz per se, but I had the amazing opportunity to go with them to essentially Ellington in New York City. And
That must have been huge.
That. Yeah, it was amazing.
Who was your clinician?
Third runner, we got second place.
Wow.
This was before they changed the model. So they were allowing conglomerate bands.
Right,
and then
right.
after we, went a few years back to back, they changed the rule and conglomerate bands were there just for exhibition and comments. But we worked with.
And here we are post-production. Just wanted to toss in that at a certain point, I asked Melissa when she had met the great trombonist Wycliffe Gordon and who her high school's adjudicator and clinician was at Jazz at Lincoln Center.
I think Marcus Prinup was our adjudicator. I've been lucky enough to work with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra musicians in a few different settings.
How cool.
I did meet Wycliffe in high school at the International Trombone Festival.
Really?
In Ithaca.
Wow, it was in Ithaca, cool. New York,
which is about an hour from my high school.
Yeah.
And I went down and I met him and he was just jamming out and I just jammed out with him.
Wow.
His son was there and somehow I had the courage to ask him for a lesson and he was like, sure. And so I went down to New York City and took a lesson with him and so he's been a mentor ever since. And that was
wonderful.
I can't remember. I think it was after essentially Ellington where I was really getting into jazz and saw my future looking something like going to New York City at some point and getting affiliated with Jazz at Lincoln Center at some point. And at the time he was affiliated with them. So I definitely wanted to make that connection and I adore his playing. I think he's
just one of the greatest
to us. He's always been there for me and I still can't believe it. Pinch myself. So
yeah, he's one of the greatest for sure. And I can hear that explains a bit in your playing. I was trying to sort it out the other day and I can hear a little bit of his voice in there.
He's a huge influence.
Yeah. And you're very refreshingly humble for somebody who is as good as you are and is doing as well as you are, because you mentioned a bunch of times in various interviews about an early lack of confidence. It took you a while to build up a confidence. But that being said, I can't think of much better example of a lot of confidence and bravery just to walk right up to one of the greatest in the world and say, hey, I'm going to play with you right now. And can I have a lesson? And so that's very confident young person right there.
That's true. I reflect on that. And I really don't know where that came from, because when I was in high school, I never felt like I was good enough at jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because I was surrounded by peers who were really quite good and
that's
a little
the
bit better
best
than me.
Way. That is the best way. I mean, you even see great musicians. They do that too. They surround themselves with the best people they can find, and it always makes them better.
Yeah. And I look back on it now and it's really quite incredible, because we're all professional full-time musicians and instructors still. So
wow,
really lucky to have that group of peers kind of curated by our teachers.
Yep. That's what an environment that is such an advantage. I know as you're starting to do the guest artist thing and the outreach thing, and you're going to so many different schools, that you see that not all programs get that kind of advantage. You know, that was really a quite a blessing for you. And man, you just took right off because of it. I think just having those folks around you is huge. So, okay. So we're at Liverpool. Is that better? Liverpool is getting Ringo.
Ringo. Say Liverpool here.
Yeah, still hanging at Liverpool. But at a certain point, you're going to head on out to Ann Arbor in Michigan. And what brought that decision about? And before we get to that, let's mention you're developing now as a trombonist. You chose trombone just out of the blue. You liked it when you were 9 or something like that. Just said, bam, I'm a trombonist.
Yeah. So growing up, I have 6 siblings, and
wow,
my mom loves music and she plays really well by ear, but she never learned how to read music. So it was really important to her that we all played music and had lessons. So we all took piano lessons, and then we all had to choose an instrument. And my older siblings already played flute, clarinet, oh, and French horn. So I wasn't allowed to play what they played.
Oh,
so those
that's
were already off.
Wow.
But I did get to go to their concerts, at band concerts. And I just remember seeing like the slides in that situation. They were all moving together. And I was like, what's that instrument or the slide? That's just really cool. It's just visually appealing to me.
Yeah.
That's what I selected. And my middle school teacher played trombone. So I had a really nice foundation there too.
You had kind of already a sonic template from hearing the middle school teacher playing.
Right. And the correct technique.
Yeah.
In connection to that.
Well, you chose the perfect instrument. I'm sorry to tell all your siblings, but, you did.
Yeah, you they know.
Oh, they know. Okay, all right. Well, who were some of the first influences? So we're still kind of in Liverpool, maybe even before, and you're hearing trombone players. Who were the first ones that you thought, ooh, they sound great?
Well, I mean, Wycliffe Gordon, you can check right off the list.
You heard him early on then, huh?
Yes, through my experiences with Essentially Ellington.
Yep.
Where I would say I was listening to, like I said, I wasn't allowed to listen to music very much.
Right.
I guess somehow jazz slipped through the cracks, and I was given a box set of jazz CDs. And so it wasn't so much trombone that I was listening to at the time, but it was Mingus, it was Monk, it was Coltrane, and Duke Ellington. Those were like my biggest influences. And then when I started jamming out with my high school friends and we were trying to be hip, we started getting into Roy Hargrove. I want to say Soul Live.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you ever heard
of it. I'll edit it and then I'll come back and add something, make it sound like I knew exactly who that was when you said it.
Yeah, I remember it was so funny because, you know, they do these like high school pageants, and there was this pageant called Miss Liverpool, and they were voting for Mr. and Miss Liverpool, and you do a talent portion, and I went and I played trombone and I played a Soulive song.
That's super random, cool.
Super nerdy. I did not win. I think the person won was a dancer.
Well, of course.
You know.
Well, you got to have really, really hip judges to choose the trombone player. I mean, they should have, but well, right. You know, that says something too. That says something too, because one of the things I notice about your sound, and you've already developed what I think is a very recognizable style, which is the height of what a jazz player can do, and yours seems to be heading towards kind of a soulful singing style that reminds me a lot of R&B singer when I hear you play, especially just a straight up melody. It sounds like that. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that you would have just jumped up on stage and played a melody. And, you know, it really comes through in your playing, very, very soulful. So, yeah, it's the first thing I noticed was that. And it's we'll talk about that more in the lightning round when we go fast and go through. Like, I've got 7 I want to talk about. I don't know if we can get that many in there. But okay, so yeah, so such a great experience at Liverpool. And then you head on out to Ann Arbor. And Dennis Wilson, a good pal of mine, gets you into jazz. But first you started out with David Jackson with classical, is that right? Uh-oh, left you hanging on that one. We'll come right back to that in just a minute. But first, as the groove in the background would suggest, it's time for a commercial. It's a word from our sponsor, our one and only sponsor, and that would be me. Yeah, it's about my book, Leadology. The podcast is named after that, and it is associated with it. What is it? It's a website community, Leadology. It's leadtrombone.com, LeadTrombone.com. And it's a book all about lead trombone playing. So, man, jump on over to leadtrombone.com today and pick up about 10,000 copies of that, you know, because I like to eat, yo. All right. Hey, let's get back to the discussion now with Melissa Gardner and University of Michigan, Ann Arbor.
Yes, David Jackson is the reason why I went to University of Michigan.
Ah.
He really paved the path for me. And I remember him calling me in the recruitment process and just checking in with me. And
good for him.
Yeah, he was so supportive from day one throughout mm-hmm. my journey there, and I could still call him today and he would be supportive. So I'm so grateful to him.
That's great.
Originally studied classical, and then I wanted to always play jazz on the side. Like, you know, we had mentioned I didn't feel confident enough to be a jazz major, but I loved jazz, so I played in the big band and I did some jazz combo stuff, just like, you know, electives. And at some point I remember someone asking me, wait, you're not a jazz major, what are you doing? And so I started exploring that. I was just in an environment where there was a lot of encouragement. There were women on the faculty like Ellen Rowe.
Oh sure, I know Ellen. Yeah, she's great.
Aiden, and I even remember Ellen brought in Ingrid Jensen. So like, I think something clicked and I realized I could do jazz. I could do
absolutely
this. I'm capable of this. So halfway through my journey at U of M, or maybe even in my second year, I was able to switch over to being a jazz major. I think once I started going through orchestral excerpts, I said, I'm done.
That's enough. Yes, that's what you mean. You can never miss a note. What?
I have a lot of respect for orchestral musicians.
Oh, me too.
It was pretty excruciating.
Yeah, it's a different beast, that's for sure, the orchestral thing. And nowadays there's so many trombonists that can do both really well that it's frightening, the high level of talent that's out there now. Well, that's very exciting. So you're working in both areas now, and then you were with Dennis. Did you study any arranging or writing with Dennis? He's such a good writer.
I did. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I took arranging with him. I
Yeah.
played at his big band. I feel like the reason why I love playing lead in a big band is because of Dennis Wilson. He really taught me so much about how to play lead. And he was very supportive with arranging and all of that, and
Yeah.
taught me, forced me to learn Sibelius. And I'm really glad I did learn
Oh, he's
Sibelius, of things. So,
his
yeah,
finale
here.
is gone now. So yeah, you chose
Yep.
correctly once again. And
Yeah.
I like
Yeah, let's.
Sibelius because you can just copy an entire line, throw it in the drum part, and hit the plug in and it makes a drum part for you. That was enough to
Cool. I
sell
just
me right
something
there.
new today. Don't
It's
give them
so
a part.
yeah, it's really a good plug-in. And a finale person will say, "Oh, I can do that too," and then they'll go through 1,000 steps to get there. But plug-in says, "Ding, ding, ding, drum part." So yeah, I like that. So anyway, talking about the whole scene there at Ann Arbor, and Ellen, of course, must have been a big influence. And then that's where you met Ingrid, and you recorded with her later. She's just one of my favorite musicians on the planet. Who else could carry an entire Maria Schneider chart or Darcy James Argue? They're just like, okay, I'm going to write all this stuff. Ingrid, you play through the whole chart, and she does it. Just yeah, she's amazing, and brings us all to also to a thread that I noticed in a lot of your interviews where you're very concerned with something I'm concerned with, and I think most of the jazz community is, and that is uplifting people who aren't just the usual male jazz players and making sure that everybody else is invited to the table and teaching other women that of course you can play jazz if you like it. Get to work. And it's wonderful that you're doing that. There's no need to emphasize that, of course, on my part, but I just think that it's wonderful you're doing it. Do you find that it's
Yeah.
still a thing
I
out there? It's a
right,
it's
that's a good question. I would say
yeah.
like I kind of have to promote it by default. Like it is,
Right.
it feels like my part of my role and part of my purpose, because
Yeah.
it's obviously so intertwined my identity as a woman in jazz. And it's a mixed bag. Like sometimes I feel like I've been blessed with more opportunities because of that, because people are making such incredible efforts right now to be inclusive and represent.
Right.
And unfortunately, the reason why I'm getting more opportunities is because there are so few of us still in the bigger picture.
I would
So
hope
it's
that would
like
change.
a
Just
blessing and a curse.
right,
It
I could
is
see that,
changing. I
sure.
absolutely believe it is. I think that the efforts that are being made now is paving the path for so many more in the future, in
Right.
terms of representation. It's always been there, but I've
Sure.
seen much more of an effort lately than ever before. But on the other hand, with the added opportunities, I could balance that with opportunities that I don't get. Like a month ago in 2024, I
Yeah.
got called for a gig to play in a horn section for a video shoot at a pretty big venue here for a major artist. And then I got called back the day later saying, never mind, they want all men because they
Oh.
want them to match. So
Isn't that
here we
crazy?
are. In
Man.
2024. And that's a small example of, all the things. And that was said out loud. But imagine all the things
Wow.
that aren't said out loud with similar.
Right.
So,
Yeah.
I could go on, but
It's
it is
so
still a thing in
silly.
some circles.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I really do feel hopeful that things are changing. I've even witnessed a big change in some of the institutions that I was a part of that are now just growing. So
Yeah,
I'm
it's
hopeful.
well, me too. And just your efforts by virtue of just being a great player and a great spokesperson for the music, it's just going to naturally open up some other people's eyes. And, oh, by the way, she's a woman, and though that's just natural. It's kind of like the old Dr. Seuss, the Sneetches story. I don't know if you've ever read that one. I would highly recommend it. It's you can get a book called Six by Seuss, and it's got these stories, and one of them is the Sneetches, and it gets into a metaphor for racism and I suppose sexism as well. It's like the Sneetches that have a star on their stomach are the hip ones, and those that don't have a star are excluded. And it's really good, but hopefully, and then it ends up with a Sneetch is a Sneetch, and that's what it should be at the end of the day. It's just how do you play? Oh, you sound great. Okay, cool.
Dr. Seuss was ahead of his time.
Ah, he was, and you know, not completely infallible. You can go back and see he was a man of his time in some things. Some of his cartoons are a little cringy back in the day, but yeah, he's like one of my heroes for sure. Well, hey, speaking of heroic, you head on off to Juilliard and Steve Touré. Everybody has a good imitation of Steve Touré. I've never done it. I got to work up my Steve Touré.
I don't know if I do, but I'll let you take that one.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
I'll be honest. I gave Steve Touré a bit of a hard time at first.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I was not an easy student. I'm pretty stubborn. And it took me a minute to let my guard down with him. But once I did, the information that he had to give me was, you know, timeless. Like,
right.
You know, you just have to really like let go of whatever perception. Sometimes when you're working with artists, you have to let go of your ego, first of all. Mm. Let go of whatever perception you have of what you think you need to come into the space to learn. And let them just teach you what they can offer you, because everyone's different. Everyone has something different to offer. And once I realized that, I realized, okay, he can offer me something that's unlike anything I've ever experienced. Like, yeah, maybe this isn't what I thought I wanted to learn, but it's what I need.
So, man, that's great. I think that's Yoda level right there. That's wisdom on a very high level, and talk about brave. It's bravery as well. I mean, for somebody to say it's not what I want, but let me go ahead and learn this because it might be what I need. Almost sounds like another song out of Liverpool for me, but
right.
I guess that would be London. That would be the Rolling Stones, but. Yeah, Steve, he's a piece of work, man, Steve. But I love his playing, and you're right, man. There's a wealth of knowledge there. While you were at Juilliard, did you ever take any lessons with Joe Alessi, or was that just a thing that he only took a couple of folks? Or
I think if I really pushed it, I could have. But unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to. I was, you know, treading water in the jazz department.
that's a tough thing, but once again, you're around all these amazing wonderful people, and I saw there's a lot of cool things out. You're doing a great job already with taking charge of your narrative. When I was teaching, still I would do classes on modern approach to promotion and that kind of thing, and being in charge of your own narrative is so important. And man, you are really doing it. There's a wonderful video that I just love, that I'm looking for the name of it. It was a studio something studio video, In Your Own Words, I think it was, and beautifully produced video. And you talked about some very personal and vulnerable traumatic things that happened at Juilliard. Just wonderfully how you expressed yourself. I thought that was a beautiful video in a poignant kind of way.
Thank you. Yeah, that was, there's some really incredible artists here in Syracuse. Solon Quinn.
That's the studio. That okay, right.
Yeah, and he does amazing work here all across the board, you know, with social issues in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And Robin Stockdale was the photographer who photographed my album cover for Empowered, and she was the one who introduced me to Solon and just said, I know your story. I think you should tell it. And it needs to be trusted with this person because he's going to tell it in a way that is just going to be quite impactful. And so they were both so encouraging. They helped me honestly say what I needed to say as part of my, you know, narrative in what you had given a name, but something that I naturally just really needed to do. And so it was slightly terrifying, you know, but I was hoping that by sharing my story that I could help, or in my vulnerability, that I could just help encourage anyone else who may end up in that position, or hopefully doesn't end up in that position, you know, but could feel supported, and hopefully, you know, in the future, some of the cultural things I referenced that happened in the jazz community, hopefully that can change. And that's the reason why I shared it.
Well, absolutely. And just so the listeners know where to go on YouTube, I just kind of, I butchered the name of it. Could you tell us the name of the video again?
It's called In Her Own Words, Melissa Gardner, 2019, Solon Quinn Studios.
Solon Quinn Studios. I highly recommend it amongst all the other research that I hope all the listeners do to hear your music and learn about your story. One of the reasons I recommend it is from a technical standpoint, the video is just put together so beautifully. The B-roll and the filming and all of that, along with your narration, it's just a beautiful video and handles the subject matter in a very intelligent an accessible way. So something to be proud of for sure. And I'm gonna steal it. I wanna steal that type of approach and make a video of my own. So it's beautiful.
Yeah, we all have a story to tell.
Indeed, yeah. And that's just a small part of your story, but I'm glad that the photographer convinced you to go ahead and tell it, because it's just a little piece of the puzzle. The Melissa puzzle, but it's always good to learn the whole thing. So as Juilliard, leaving Juilliard and getting to where you are now, and where you are now, I'll just describe as, it's been described as a rising star or emerging, all of those things. I just like to say you're a wonderful performing artist with a great teaching portfolio right now. You want to mention the three places I had listed here that where you're teaching? You're doing a lot of teaching.
You may need an update because I just recently started teaching high school music.
Whoa!
In the Syracuse City School District. Yeah.
Wow. Now you really are heroic.
It's a bit of a left turn.
Yeah.
But it ties into what I was saying before about how much of an impact my high school music director had on me. And sure. I also am still on the faculty at Lemoyne College, and I have taught at Cornell University and Syracuse University.
Right.
In the university positions, I've been adjunct, so it's part-time. And while I really enjoy, you know, doing lessons, the high school music teaching job, it's incredibly purposeful for me.
Oh, cool.
And we're talking about a district that's honestly really struggling, and the students are already completely changing my life, and I'm learning something new every day. It's a whole different ball game teaching a classroom of 30 students versus one-on-one lessons.
And what's the name of the high school so we can hear about
it? It's called Institute of Technology at Syracuse Central.
Okay.
It's part of the Syracuse City School District. I teach grades 9 through 12. And I was terrified. I knew there was a teacher shortage. I knew that there were no music teachers filling in for positions that should be music teachers. So I started subbing last year. And what I didn't know was that I would love it. Like when I was subbing last year, I just felt like this is my purpose. This is what I've been looking for.
Wow.
This is like just having this type of impact is something that I completely unexpected. Oh, yeah. I am now in my first full-time year as a high school music teacher. I'm teaching general music, digital music, band, some orchestra students. I'm putting different
Wow.
ensembles together. And I'm trying to build a program where we can record the students in studio and write music for film. The school has an amazing film department and
Oh,
media department
man.
already. So there's a lot of opportunities in there, and just want to bring it all together. So
You're going to be the next Jim Spadafore for sure.
I only hope.
Ah, how wonderful. What a great advantage for those students. That's great that they're going to have you around. That's very exciting. And one of the things they can do, look at this segue right here, is that they can listen to four of your albums as a band leader and another live recording that you're on and any other number of things. So we're going to go to the lightning round in just a minute. And every time I say lightning, magically, there's a sound effect of a lightning bolt. So when I go lightning, there's the sound effect. Lightning, lightning, lightning. Okay, it gets old. But before we go to the lightning round, though, you mentioned something perfect early on because this is the Leadology podcast. And you said that you'd gotten some really good ideas about playing lead trombone. What do you think about lead trombone in general? What would be some suggestions to toss out to students of that?
Lead is super fun.
Yeah.
I think in order to play lead really well, you have to also know how to play the other chairs really well. And you're not a failure if you're not the lead player. It
Oh, that's good.
is extremely important to understand how to listen, blend, follow someone's lead, because in my opinion, that's sometimes harder than leading.
Man, it's an art form, especially play second trombone. You can make or break your career on second trombone.
So the
Yeah.
younger version of me needed to hear that just now, because
Ah,
again,
right.
I had to learn how to let go of my ego a little bit. But
It's
I do
tough.
love
It's
playing
tough.
lead. I felt like in a way I had something to prove, and one of my most favorite things is playing lead in band, I'll be honest. But really just confidence. Confidently leading this section. One thing I learned from Ellen Rowe that I'd like to suggest that I didn't learn in any other big band setting is that it's okay to, I mean, it's just playing dynamically, guide super loud and super soft. It can be really powerful.
Oh,
And whenever playing on an ensemble with Ellen Rowe, it was an octet, not a big band per se, but I was, playing lead in certain sections. Breathe together, we phrase together, we've really locked it in, and there is nothing like it. And we never overplayed. And there were some really moments where it was super tight and super energetic, but overall, we never overplayed. And so if you
Wow.
can't like play dynamically, you're missing out on some potential within the music that you're playing. So
Ah, that's huge. And yeah, I think Ellen Rowe is quite the genius, not only as a musician, but as a pedagogue and just a great person. So that must have been a wonderful experience for both of you, I would think. She was fortunate to have you in the band. But,
I still get to work with her a lot, so I'm
oh, good.
grateful.
Oh, great. All right, so to the lightning round we go. There's that great sound effect again. Can you imagine it? It's the lightning. All right, so here, what I'm going to do is I'll mention a track of something you've recorded, and then I might have some specific questions, or I might just say, the track, what do you think? And just tell me what you think about the track. So, I'm going to start with one of my favorites. I like them all that I've listed, that I chose here and purchased. Everybody must purchase music. Don't just grab it only from free places. So I purchased these.
Thank you.
Yeah, you gotta support the cause. But this is one of my favorite from the album Empowered. And that was 2019, was that Empowered? People Pleaser. I just love that tune. And so I got a couple questions. Who wrote it? Who wrote it?
Well, I think y'all probably know who wrote it, but we'll come back and let her answer that. But before we do that, let's check out the track. Here is, from the 2019 Empowered album, featuring the great Tia Fuller, as well as Melissa, this is People Pleaser.
Thank you.
God. Was that nice? That was beautiful. Tia Fuller on the saxophone there. And of course, Melissa Gardner. Hey, who wrote that tune?
I wrote People Pleaser.
Oh, man, I was hoping. That's a beautiful tune. I really like it. It's very, and it's very sticky. And that's a compliment, you know, sticky like a hook. It just was sticking with me. A great showcase for your soulful singing style, I think. I wrote down here, R&B singer. Look at that. So tell me about that track and writing that tune.
Thank you. Well, that track features Tia Fuller on the album.
Woo, sure and does. Yep.
Her role in the song, the instruction that I gave her is you are the people pleaser. So you start, I try to play what you think people want to hear, something nice, play in. Then as the song develops, start finding your voice and stop caring about what other people think and, you know, start playing outside of the box. And so that was her role in the song. And every time I perform it, I introduce it that way to the audience and choose a people pleaser in the band. And they get to just go at the end of the song. It's really fun.
How exciting. What a great thing for a soloist to get that kind of instruction. It's a programmatic approach to it. I really like that. And Tia always sounds great, but I really enjoyed her playing on that track. And you're playing, you know, melodically speaking, it's, you know, it's an R&B vocalist. It's reminds me of a lot of different players, but it's, you know, something that's instantly recognizable, and that's what we all want. Yeah, and then I'll introduce it and we'll play some of the track, but let's moving on. Oh, you know, before we leave Empowered, I really love the cool effect you do, the dialogues, the little interludes where people talk for a couple of seconds. Like, there's a cool one. Is it you and Ingrid that are discussing motherhood and stuff? And
yes, so luckily I got to do a few mini tours with Ingrid as part of Alan Rose Band, and we're both moms and we both have kiddos that are the same age. So we're kind of in the journey together, and it was really powerful because I don't typically experience that when I'm working with musicians. And you know, and she's been incredibly supportive and understanding as another mom in the world that we're in. So it's really amazing to have someone like her in my corner.
You have, as many of the great jazz musicians have, and I know that I've been blessed with it too, you have a lot of yodai. You've got a bunch of mentors. And how cool to have those people around us to help. And Ingrid, man, that's a great, talk about a Yoda. She's a great one. Oh man, and then I teared up. Is that you and your child, you and Julian with the mommy, I love you little moment?
Oh yeah, y'all know I got to play this. I'm just so emotional when it comes to children and parenthood, and this is just lovely. Check this out from the Empowered album.
Have I told you lately that I love you?
No, Mommy, you can tell me right now.
I love you.
Thank you, Mommy. I love you too.
Oh, you're killing me over here. Isn't that beautiful? That is so beautiful.
Yeah, I used to sing that to him all the time. And I had it recorded in a random video I took and posted on Instagram on a story. And I just pulled the audio from that because I used to just say it to him all the time. And I just would crack up about how he responded. So that was like our thing. And I try to include Julian on every album that I recorded.
Oh, because, cool.
It's such an integral part of who I am, and I'm trying to record music that represents my story. And so Julian's made it. I have two more kids now, and they didn't make it, so I got some work to do. I got another album and two more kids to put on there. So.
Mommy, record another album.
I'm too busy now. Yeah. Set myself up for that one.
Well, it's really cool. Everybody should check it out. Maybe I'll just include that little moment because Julian says, no, Mommy, you have not told me you love me.
All right.
That's so cute.
Quite literal.
Yeah. That is wonderful. Okay, continuing with the lightning round. Second line, Syracuse, 2011. So this goes back a little farther, I guess. Whose idea was it? And I'm going to steal this too, to do a second line version of Eternal Triangle.
I know, right? I got to play it first so y'all can check this out because it's so hip. This is second line Syracuse from 2016, The Eternal Triangle.
Thank you.
how you do that. Man, I'm going to steal that. I'm going to use that. Here's what we had to say about it, and here's some explanation from Melissa.
That is so cool. What a great idea.
That, oh my goodness. I love that song.
Yeah, me
Eternal
too.
Triangle. And so I think I just was thinking, let's try this with this band and see if we can make it, you know, make it work with a second line groove. And it was pretty, it's just one of those songs that it's challenging, you know, and kind of hip to do. So I just wanted to incorporate something like that beyond the, you know, the typical New Orleans style repertoire.
Oh man, I think it's perfect, and the bridge really lends itself to the down. It really, that's like the perfect tempo and groove, and that bridge just sounds so nice on there. So I'll play some of that, and the trumpet player is killing on that track too. He does a great job.
Yeah, Syracuse native Jeff Stockham.
Ah, Jeff, killing it. Yeah, I really love that track, and I will steal that. I've got a quartet gig coming up, and I'll give you credit though. I'll say this is an idea I got that. From Melissa Gardner. Yeah, I think it's a great way to play. I mean, most people play it bad. They're real fast and showing off their. It grooves so much harder at that slower tempo. I like it. All right. Moving on in the lightning. This is the best lightning round ever. Yeah, I'm actually going to get all seven, I think. 2023 Nova Collective. I want to hear about this. And the tune Blue. Is this another one that you wrote, or who wrote Blue?
I wrote Blue, but I sampled and, you know, was influenced, of course, by Afro Blue for this one.
I thought I heard that in there. In the background, you quoted it a little bit.
Yeah, I quoted it a little bit. Just took that as my inspiration while I was writing the song. It's really something I started writing as a loop of beat. Pretty much whenever I try to write an original song, something that I know and love and already have in my repertoire comes out instead. and I was like, we know this kind of hip though, so I'm gonna put it together and it comes out.
I thought I heard Afro Blue in there. I wasn't gonna say anything in case it was a delightful accident, but it's a cool homage for sure. I would try to describe it maybe as it's almost like a hip hop R&B tinged love song groove piece. It's I don't even know what to call it, but I really, really, really like it. Towards the end, I like a lot of the double tracks. So you'll double track the trombones. It's a sound of a trombone, and then there's on a hook or something, or on a chorus, you put the two trombones in, which is one of my favorite sounds to record. The double track the trombones. That sounds great. And then towards the end, you took it to the logical extreme of counterpoint Melissa's, like there's multiple trombone solos. Which I think
I'll say
is
that
great.
Happened in post on accident, but it worked.
Yeah, I like it. That's a great sound. That goes way back. First time I heard that done was one of my heroes, Jimmy Panko, with the group Chicago, and one of their early records. There's a tune called Mother that Robert Lamb wrote, and there's two Jimmys and two speakers, and I thought that was the greatest thing ever. So
I mean, more trombone is always better.
Words to live by. Listeners, take heed. There's never too much trombone, that's for sure.
It's poils, folks. Poils of wisdom we're dropping right here. So let's hear the tune. From 2023's Nova Collective, here's Melissa's composition, Blue.
Tell me what you like, show me what it feels like, hit me with the vibe, only when it feels right. Say my name, I need you to keep up with the groove, though I don't like it too slow.
I think I'm really into you, every time time you step up in the room. Everything feels right when I'm with you. When you touch me, I turn into blue. I think I'm really into you. Every time you step up in the room, everything feels right when I'm with you. When you touch me, I turn into blue.
So fuck what you heard, say what you like. I'm like a bird taking a flight. Hitting the gas, give me your light. Just say the word, I'm making it right. Sticking the landing, just you and I. Let's make a plan and visit Dubai. Let's make a family, let's make a life. Less of the woes and less of the strife. Right? You don't want to, but you like me. Especially when I'm yapping in my white tee. All these other women don't even excite me. And you're on the road to becoming my wifey, likely.
Don't care what my family says. Take me anywhere. Boy, I'll be your slave. Cause I think I'm really into you. Every time you step up in the room, everything feels right when I'm with you. When you touch me, I turn into blue. I think I'm really into you. Every time you step up in the room, everything feels right when I'm with you. When you touch me, I turn into blue.
I should put a ring on it. Perfect body and the timing of the moonlight. Got me feeling like it's going down tonight. Ain't no time to waste, I'm ready when you go. I'ma make you explode, baby, twofold. And I ain't gonna leave, I ain't gonna leave you. So move your body to the sound of the speaker.
I don't care what my family says. Take me. I'm really into you. Every time you step up in the room, everything feels right when I'm with you. When you touch me, I turn into blue. I think I'm really into you. Every time you step up in the room, everything feels right when I'm with you. When you touch me, I turn into blue.
Yep. Yeah, never too much trombone. Hear them multi-tracked Melissae at the end there.
And the Nova Collective concept, what is that?
So I wrote the framework for Blue, but I did invite musicians together as a collective, musicians who I hire most often for weddings. And so we're playing wedding, dance band music all along, all wedding season. And then in the winter, there's no work. Like, everybody's twiddling their thumbs or, you know, working some random job instead of being a musician. And they're all so incredible. So I wrote a little mini grant and got a little bit of funding to put together this project during off. And we composed collectively. So we each came in with an idea, some framework, and then we added our own voices to it. I did not write the lyrics to Blue. You don't want me to write the lyrics. Not a great I just said, here's what I'm thinking, and I put out some MIDI stuff, and then we kind of just vibed out for a while and then tracked it a few weeks later. So
it's very successful, and it's a true collective then. That's interesting to hear the backstory on that, because when people check it out, and I hope they do, and once again just go ahead and buy the whole thing, there's a lot of places where you can still buy the music. I mean, for me, it's one of the easiest places is Amazon Prime. You know, you can just grab the MP3 recording. But there's many ways to do it, and you don't have to just have the music for free. Go ahead and, because Melissa's kids got to eat, folks. They need to give those people some money. Buy the track. I hope they do, and when they do, they're going to hear a wonderful collection there. Well, let's cover them all. I think we're going to do this. 2011, back then, what? You did two in 1 year, maybe? Was it you did Transitions and the Second Line?
Second Line was later on.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember the year I released Second Line at the moment, but Yeah, Transitions was my very first album coming right out of college. And that was what I originally called my enhanced business card. I was trying to show a little bit of everything. So I did some standards, some originals, and try to showcase different styles so that I could just book some gigs in New York.
Oh, that makes sense. Because you had, that's the straight, I chose but, the straight ahead one by one, the Wayne Shorter tune. I've always loved that as a track to check out.
And I was working with my peers from Juilliard, so they're all incredible. And I'm so happy that I have this, you know, moment in time recorded with these musicians.
A snapshot.
So, yeah, I listen to it every now and then and hear something new every time. And it's like looking at an old picture of yourself. You're like, wow, I can't believe I thought I was fat. You know, like, I can't believe I thought this was terrible.
Right.
You know, like, you just hone into your little instead of realizing, okay, this actually feels really good. Or, you know, like, I learned from this or whatever. But
that's very cool. I think of recordings that way too. They really are snapshots of where you were at that time. And that's a good one. I highly recommend this one too, just to hear different style areas. And if you want to hear Melissa just playing some straight ahead, it's right there on One by One and other ones on Transitions.
So running low on time right now. So let's check an excerpt from Transitions of the Wayne Shorter piece, the iconic One by One. And I'm going to fade it in. Let's play a little bit at the beginning. I'll fade it out and then we'll fade back in on Melissa's solo. So an excerpt of One by One from Transitions. My apologies to the trumpet solo, which was very, very nice. But as we're low on time, I just wanted to get through that beautiful trombone solo. So soulful. Let's go back to the discussion.
But here's one of my favorite groups that splinter off into other things, and I've just loved all of them, and that's the people that you were around at Ann Arbor that became Wolfpack. So we got some Wolfpack to talk about here. And Ann Arbor, you end up on the live at Madison Square with the Wolfpack people, and Corey Wong. Yeah. And I love when Corey's involved, and I love like the Fearless Flyers and all that stuff. But so I was checking out this stuff from live in Madison Square Garden with Wolfpack, and you and the saxophonist, what is his name?
Joey Dostick.
Ah, okay, right. Sounded great. You guys sounded wonderful. I grabbed two things for the lightning round here. One is Animal Spirits. And man, I thought you two sounded great on that. It was like the Crusaders, you know, like a Wayne Henderson kind of sound. Very Crusader-y, but also there was some, yeah. I thought there was also some Jackson 5 up in there, from speaking historically, just the tune itself, Animal Spirits. But what a cool thing. What was it like, before we get into the tune, just being in Ann Arbor with such an eclectic, talented bunch of people like Joe Dart and all those guys?
Right. Well, I didn't know Joe from Ann Arbor. I met him through Wolfpack later, but Theo and I were really close, and I was in a band with Jack Stratton, the Wolfpack band leader.
Right.
I was in like a party cover band. We would just get wild and play like ridiculous like bar parties and stuff. And I never would have imagined. Oh, it was so fun. Yeah, I never would have imagined that Wolfpack would turn into what it has turned into, because we're
huge.
Really just having fun. But Jack is brilliant. He's got incredible strategies and really strong concepts, and you know, they're also talented musically as well. And so I'm just really like, it's been so exciting watching their journey and being invited to be a part of it. And you know, in terms of Madison Square Garden, that was, for me, was just a highlight.
I'm interrupting post-production because I want to play a little bit of this, just excerpts, two more excerpts here. This is from the live at Madison Square Garden, Wolfpack, and the horn section is Joey Dossick on the saxophone and Melissa Gardner on trombone. Check this out, Animal Spirits.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mercy. See what I was talking about there? It's like some Crusaders, Jazz Crusaders, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Just feeling good. That kind of music, you can't feel bad anymore. I mentioned also that Melissa gets just a little bit, a little like 8 bars or so on the tune Aunt Leslie, and we discussed that. So let's give that a listen. Here's just Melissa's solo on Aunt Leslie.
Melissa Gardner, bring the phone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you only get a couple bars to play, you got to bring it. And bring it she did.
You know, that's easy now.
Yes, absolutely. The energy that comes off of out of an audience like that, such a huge audience and such a iconic venue. Golly, that's just, and you can tell that kind of energy coming through. They gave you a little wee snippet on Aunt Leslie. And yeah. they let you cut loose a little bit and you sound great on that. I'll put some of this on here, but you can feel the energy, that cool symbiotic thing that happens with a huge audience that just loves what you're doing. It just empowers, it takes the soloist to another level, and you just, man, huge sound playing some hip Middle Eastern scale. I don't know what you were doing. I'd have to analyze it, but it
I don't know either. I was trying to keep it simple and not screw it up. I was like, you only have a short time. Don't show off. Just play something that feels good.
Well, you did. And that's one of the toughest things when you only have about 8 bars and you got to say what you got to say. And I think you did a great job with that. It's illustrative, I think, for the listeners to check out and say, no, you don't get to stretch 20 minutes all the time. Here's an example of somebody saying a lot in just a little small snippet. So congrats on that. So let's see, we got this hard cutoff here. I got to make sure I catch it. We're going to hit number 7. I can't believe it. So this brings us to talking about your group a little bit. I've always loved the organ trio thing, but you guys are at another level at the MG3, which is a cool name. I really like that name. What does the MG stand for? No, I think I know what it stands for. But the Mighty Group. Right. Oh, man. So the MG3, I really enjoy, maybe my favorite tune. I don't know. I think People Pleaser might be my new favorite. But I enjoy Bump off of Empowered 2. Is that also your composition?
It is. I wrote Bump a while before I ever recorded it. It was when I was pregnant with my firstborn, who's now 13.
Is that the Bump?
And it was referring to baby Bump. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Kind of like bopping around. I actually had a baby shower at this venue in New York City called Shrine, and it's in Harlem. It's like a world music venue. And we called it Melissa's Boom Bop Baby Shower. And we had a roommate who was like a hip hop MC, and we had poetry and all this stuff. And it was really great. And it was like, I'm just that kind of energy, you know, like just,
yeah,
you know, dancing around with a baby bump.
Yeah. Now the other kids are going to figure out that Julian got 2 spots now on that album then with the bump and actually speaking.
Right.
So it's, they're going to demand at least 2 cuts on each. Yeah,
the competition is going to be fierce.
I know, right? I want 3 on this album, Mom. And also, you did a great video on this too. That's where I first heard the song. Tell us about how the video came about. I mean, it's such an important thing nowadays to get you in getting one's music out there, is to have also a visual presence. And that video is very, very professionally done. So tell us about how you did that.
Oh, well, thank you. It was one of those things where audio wasn't reaching people in the same way video is with social media on it. And I'm really glad that I have that I made the extra effort to capture that. And yeah, it's something we did in studio in Syracuse, the place called Subcat Studios. And I really thought it's a beautiful venue. They have a great organ and.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And what your organ player's name again? I'm going to get the names of everybody and the drummer.
So for that one, I am pretty sure it was Will Berman on the organ and Byron Cage on the drum set. And Will doesn't live in Syracuse anymore. But I believe he was in high school at the time.
Really? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
He really sounds amazingly talented. And he's since gone on to, you know, major in jazz and is an amazing musician in the New York City area. It was really working with him. And the videography was done by Dennis Fernando. He was
very well done.
Great artist here in Syracuse.
Man, see, that's once again for the listeners. It's great to play lead trombone and to do that very well. It's great to write and perform and teach. But when you're getting your message out, nowadays you have to hit on all cylinders, as they say, 100 years ago. You've got to cover all the bases, and that's what Melissa's done by going the extra mile, as you said, and making a nice video on a nice tune. And that groove, man, that groove is like that. It's, you mentioned Roy Hargrove. That might be the first place I heard that groove, was like a RH Factor or something. And then Ari Honig, maybe. Jacob Collier seems to favor that groove quite a bit.
What is it that Mingus was supposed to have said? It's attributed to somebody hip. Let's just say it was Mingus. Talking about music is like dancing about architecture. Could have been Thelonious Monk. Anyway, let's stop talking about it. Here's Bump from Empowered by Melissa Gardner.
go out and buy Empowered. But Bump, it's a video too. You can just go on YouTube and check it out.
Right.
It is accessible. It's out there. Unbelievably, that ends the lightning round, all seven things that I had in mind, and we're at 4:18, so we're just
about time.
Yeah. Unbelievable, we made it through. Well, that allows me to then say, go to the next segment, which is, this sounds ominous, what's next for Melissa Gardner? What is next? What's in the future? Well, besides 28 hours a day at a high school gig, which is going to be very inspirational for you and the students, but what else is going to be coming up in the future for Melissa?
I mean, it's top secret.
Oh, we won't tell anybody.
No. Honestly, I, if anything, I've learned to stay open-minded, to keep the door open, to constantly grow, and to try to get grant funding for projects.
That's huge. So tough.
For me, I'll be honest, that really, once, you know, if I get that in place, it motivates me so much. Even just thinking of an idea and applying for the grant, whether or not I get the funding, it propels me into that project regardless, because it's something I've put so much time and effort and energy into creating conceptually that it helps me push forward.
That's
so wonderful. I have things that I'm cooking up in terms of, you know, artistry. I'll always be pursuing that no matter what employment I have otherwise.
Right.
So I'm
excited
to, you know, hopefully feature an album that includes my other kids too.
Yep. Well, you're committed to that now. They will insist on that. So you've got
have to be fair.
Yep. Got to be fair. And now they know that each album has to have at least two tracks that refer to them. So they'll be on it. They'll keep you honest. Well, I can say that I know I am, but I would imagine everybody else is looking forward to all those projects. And I hope the grants come in and money just starts flowing all over the place so you can just continue this artistic direction, because it's really cool what you're doing. And unbelievably, we've come to the end of the my notes and stuff. So I guess this will give you plenty of time to get ready to go pick up the kids. And
indeed,
it was a pleasure to have you here today. Thanks so much for being on the podcast. So glad you could do it. And
thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I am impressed with all this stuff you were able to dig up and enjoy. You reminded of some of those moments. You just brought me right back to some really cool moments in my in my life. So thank you for that. Well, I'm really quite honored that you invited.
Well, it's my pleasure, and it's my pleasure to bring you and your music to anybody who is going to be listening, and that's about 20 million last time I checked. This is unbelievably popular podcast. So I don't know. I'm making up the number. It might be 20.
I might not even need a grant.
There you go. What? You were on the Leadology podcast? Here's $1 million. Please make. So, well, thanks again, and keep on keeping on, because you're doing everything absolutely correctly and right. And thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Have a wonderful day, and I can't wait to check out the podcast.
All right. It'll be coming out soon. Yes, we'll have sound effects aplenty. All right, well, thanks a lot, and much love. Lightning. We'll have lightning for sure. There will be lightning. Woo! How about that, folks? Melissa Gardner. Go check out her music. Purchase her music. And you can find out all about it at Melissa May Music. That's MelissaMayMusic.com. Go check it out. And as always, thank you for checking out the Leadology podcast, where we're talking to trombonists about trombone. And as a reward, I don't know, what can I do? I think as a reward, it's time for a D flat and a trombone solo. Get it, Stevie! We'll be right back.
Astrology Podcast is a production of Wiest World Productions 2024.